They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today on the Commons, we have Stan Rincevich. Stan has been working very, very hard in Colorado to try and make things right in HOAs, particularly with transfer fees. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, when you have a management company sitting there being paid to manage the association and somebody sells their house, they like to charge sometimes hundreds, and I've even heard of thousands of dollars, just to take the seller's name out of their computer and put the buyer's name in there with all their information. Am I right on that, Stan?
Yes, and we have worked to challenge this transfer fee this year, 2014. On researching this, it's quite interesting that back in 2011 in Colorado, transfer fees were made illegal on all residential home sales except HOAs, mobile home parks, and timeshare communities that have memberships, like HOA has a membership through dues. And going into this, we started collecting information, and you referred to the excessive fees. We found them as low as between $0 and $50 and got or acquired documents showing a transfer fees of over $1,000, $1,100. And pursuing this, you summarized it well. Most of this work, if not all of the work involved in a transfer fee, is very clerical, routine, and is already paid for via the property management company's relationship or contract with the HOA. This is an opportunity fee or assessment. We like to call it an exit tax just to get out of the HOA. And we challenged it, found a legislative sponsor, and in summary, after sending out our members thousands, literally thousands of emails, meeting with legislators, telephone calls, we were on what we'll call a roll, a positive note on getting this through. And then our friends from the CAI, and how we know this, they were passing out business cards. CAI actually flew people out from Virginia.
Really?
Yes, from Virginia. And a state senator said, Stan, you are going to hit a roadblock soon. And we knew of virtually none. We were not being challenged on any of the content we were arguing. They said they have lobbyists. They're here from Virginia. Here's a card. He said, I'm showing this to you because this is what's going on. So the CAI Virginia in Denver or Colorado lobbied, and in 1 week turned around everything we did over the past 2 months, 2-3 months of our citizen efforts and gutted the bill entirely. We were trying to limit these fees and have them justified. They were being used illegally. We even proved that. And all of that was taken out of the bill and replaced with, I hate this word in any law, a disclosure law, which now simply means you can continue to be abusive, but please document it someplace. There are still no, it will go unabated, unchallenged, and that's where the bill is today. It's quite sad. And unlike a bill you had in Virginia recently with allowing more independent, let's call it, unchallenged assessments on homeowners for violations of any sort, you had a collective effort, at least in the part I've been reading about, between Democrats and, for example, Tea Party folks, or let's call more conservative folks who are, indicate they're against taxes, fees, and assessments that aren't justified. In Colorado, the support we had vanished overnight, even from those folks who are traditionally against taxes and unwarranted fees. So we look at it being defeated. It'll be up next year. We're not going away with it. But it's quite sad, the outside influence and the money spent in our legislature by the CAI, and they're very proud of it. They put it on their website that they basically kicked us in the butt and got everything we advocated removed.
They actually put that on their website.
They were posting on their website initially that this bill, and it's on our, posted on our website, the article, that this bill looked like it was gaining support and they were going to be working with the legislature in their, some type of cute words, to modify it, meaning gut it, and that's what exactly happened. By the way, they did that, the timing, and we have it, before the bill was gutted, their plans on attacking this. They also, and we find this reprehensible, you probably have the equivalent of what we call DORA, Department of Regulatory Agencies, in Virginia. They even indicated, almost came out and said it, that this plan for disclosure, instead of providing something concrete and defined, like limiting the fee to $50 or $100, which we objected to, but was our compromise position, indicated that DORA, the government agency, and also the other one that can be condemned in this, is the Colorado Association of Realtors, advocated not limiting the fee, but doing it through disclosure, even though disclosure means you can't challenge it, you still have to pay it. We went after DORA directly, asking how a government agency could get involved or allow for this group, the CAI, to openly indicate that this was an acceptable solution to transfer fees when in fact we believe they just trumped it up, dreamed it up, or in fact got their advocacy or approval. So we have a government agency here that we're fighting. They say that never happened. We have comments that indicate that, and it was floating around the state capitol from senators and House representatives, that the DORA solution was going to be the thing to replace our transfer fee bill, and there's no need to limit anything because disclosure would do it, and DORA said they could do it, and the Colorado Association of Realtors was in favor of this. And when we approach these folks, they all deny it. But that's what we're out here against. And it was a campaign of flat out, no other word, lies, misinformation. And they listened to the CAI and threw out all the homeowner concerns. So, yes, quite tragic for homeowners. It costs homeowners $15 million a year in these fees.
This is all deja vu, Stan, because we had the exact same thing here, and we have the equivalent of DORA. And initially, CAI decided that it would be kind of a neat thing to have, to know how many HOAs we have. So the law was that you had to register, and there was a $25 annual registration fee. And this was allegedly to allow the state to keep track of the HOAs. Now, if local municipalities issue the approvals for these things, they should be able to go through their records and find out how many there are. But no, we had to have this. So all of a sudden you had this little pot of money that was growing down there. And then we had CAI come up with a state employee who was going to manage this. And ironically, it came out of the same guy who was managing HOAs and all of that was also managing funeral homes. We thought it was quite an apt coincidence. Well, it wasn't such a coincidence, but that's what his job was. He was supposed to regulate both HOAs and funeral homes. Every time I saw him and I tried to talk to him to find out what he was up to and what he was doing, he was surrounded by CAI because the guy was a gutless, just really a nothing guy. I mean, he just didn't know what he was doing. He was the puppet. The strings were being pulled. He was a state employee. And when I talked to him, he got all flustered. So CAI literally came around and surrounded him whenever I was in the room so that I could not talk to him.
What did the other, have you had any legislative?
Okay, so what happened was this was sort of the interim, the foot in the door solution. Then they came up with the CICB, the Common Interest Community Board, which is what they have now. They have, supposedly, an ombudswoman who is only allowed to explain the law, not your governing documents, but the law. She's an attorney. Okay, so if you contact her, and from what I understand, people who have contacted her have told me that just filling out the paperwork, you need a law degree. It is so convoluted, so complex, so complicated. Everything is designed to frustrate the homeowner. But when you finally get there, she says, oops, all I'm allowed to do is explain the law to you. That's not, I don't want to pay extra for that. But you know what? It looks like we have someone looking out for the homeowners. This Common Interest Community Board is made up of every member of the industry that's out there. You've got attorneys, you've got managers, you've got timeshare people, you've got realtors, you've got developers, everybody. They did have three homeowners on the board when they introduced this massive rewrite of the HOA law. And we fought to get at least two of them that had to live in an HOA. They didn't even want that. They didn't want anyone from an HOA on there. So the ones they have now sort of are more CAI than CAI ever dreamt of being. It is so strongly tilted away from the homeowner, but it looks good. People, it looks good. Hey, Virginia, good for you. You've got this. No, it's just another lopsided. It's not a good deal. It's not a good deal for homeowners at all.
What do you have any legislators who are HOA advocates that have any concern about this? Just look at this board, for example, about getting it more balanced.
You know what? It's interesting that you said that because this has been a very interesting legislative year. There were several HOA bills introduced. All of them, well, a couple of them, one of them was good. And that one was House Bill 530. And it basically said that the declarant, the developer, the HOA, and the homeowners all had to abide by the laws and the governing documents. Okay? And that's because there have been some issues in court cases. So this delegate Brenda Pogue came up and said, all right, everybody has got to obey the law. I mean, you'd think that would be a no-brainer, right?
That's what I was thinking.
you know, you've got to follow the law. Well, guess what happens, Dan? It ended up in committee where they struck out the words the HOA. So right now in the law, it says that the declarant and the homeowners have got to obey the law, but the association doesn't have to do that. We went to Richmond a number of times and we talked to the legislators, and the worst of the bills was 791, and this is the one that's got all the headlines all over the place. But, ironically, it passed both the chambers. It went through the House of Delegates. It passed. It went to the Senate. It was amended. It passed the Senate with one or two people voting no. I mean, the balance was just incredible. What happened was we made so much noise about this bill that it went back to the House, and the House refused to accept the Senate amendments. And the Senate insisted that their amendments be included. So now we're at an impasse between the two houses. So it went to a special conference committee. And we looked at the makeup of the conference committee, and it was four of the six people had voted for this. Two of them were co-sponsors of the bill. And there were only two of them that had voted no on this. But somehow when it got in committee, the whole dynamics changed. And they more or less gutted it. And so what you have is very little of the original language left. But that's where, and I think it took all this noise to get the legislators to stop and really listen and read the documents, read the bills in front of them, and understand what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the attorney legislators who were able to explain the language, because again, let's make no mistake about it, this came from CAI.
Right. You know, you touched on something there, and you're involved in the process quite a bit. What surfaces here, and this has nothing to do with a party affiliation or nothing, these legislators are voting for or against bills, and one can argue, well, there's so many, they can't be knowledgeable of all of them. Well, I would think that they would at least get some diversity of opinion and understand a little about what they're voting for. I can tell you out here, whenever we try to do something, we're talking to people who have no idea what's in the bill.
Oh, yeah.
I found that very disheartening, and they'll say, well, you know, we have 100 or 200, whatever number. But I said, well, you know, I spent time with you. You have all these emails. You acknowledge there's a problem. And then you go along with a group like the CAI on these transfer fees to make sure nothing's changed. I said, how does that jive with all this? And I'm telling you, I talked to folks, at least the you had a nice coalition between the, let's call it the Democrats and Tea Party folks, probably some conservative folks. Out here, I've talked to people who call transfer fees basically, these are conservative people who are against taxes and fees. They call it extortion, or, you know, this, that, and the other. And then they support the rewrite of the bill. And you try to get back to them after you catch them doing this, and then you get the cold shoulder. Then they don't respond to you at all. They don't want to be held what we'll call accountable for their vote. And we found that on so many levels. I'll tell you, indicative of HOA law in your, I'm sure in every state, we had four bills passed last year, and they were claiming somehow victory for the homeowners, and there was nothing in there. They were all gutted. We had a bill this year passed, and it was almost a waste of time, but it indicated that email addresses of the homeowners could not be, let's call it, publicly distributed without the permission of the homeowner. Okay. That bill, guess what, went flying right through. And I asked the sponsor of the bill, who I know, I said, you know, last year there were four bills passed, and one of them had to do with disclosure, release of HOA records, retention of HOA records, several others. And I said, if there is a violation, and I'm going to be getting back to your board in Virginia. This is where
it's a sham. It's a sham. I promise you it's a sham.
Where are you supposed to go? Who are you supposed to argue to? And these legislators agree 100% that the courts don't serve homeowners. And I said, well, why aren't you doing something for the bill that we proposed for the last couple of years about out-of-court binding dispute resolution, not mediation, binding dispute resolution? And then we got a study completed which recommends that process. And I said, you can keep passing all these bills. We don't need more bills. We need effective bills. All you're doing is you have ornamental bills passed that sound good, make you feel pretty good when you vote for them, but when there is a violation, the homeowner is still stuck back in court. Why can't you do something about that? And, they give you this starry look, like, I don't know how we're going to do that, because the CAI, believe me, does not want that, because they are lawyers, they like court cases, they make a lot of money
No. You know, they're going to make the same money by going to arbitration. But the problem is, first of all, an arbitrator does not have to know the law. And right now, you're protecting rights that are legal. So you need someone who understands what your legal rights are. And all of this is written very legally. The other thing, the other mistake that people make is they think that if they go to arbitration, it's not going to cost them as much, and it's going to be a lot easier. What people don't realize is that when you go to arbitration, both of you can choose your arbitrator. Both of you can pick one. You'll have a list of them. But if you look at the odds, the fact that Stan may not end up in arbitration too many times in his life is going to be weighed in the decision making, because now the HOA is likely to be back in next week. If the arbitrator found for Stan, the HOA is going to go to another arbitrator. These guys get paid by the arbitration. So there's no oversight in that. Plus, when you go into those things, when you go into arbitration, everything is sealed. Now, we know what happens when there's no sunlight, when you don't get to look at it and when you don't know what's happening. And then you have these confidentiality clauses in the settlement agreement, which means that you can't talk about it, which means that your neighbor's going to go through the same thing that you went through without knowing that you've been through it, without knowing what the outcome was, without knowing that the association spent his money to pay you off. You know, the whole thing is just really, really bad. It's like cockroaches. You turn the lights out, they go to town. When you go to court, and a lot of the bills we had in Virginia this year are the result of homeowners taking associations to court because the associations were acting outside the scope of their authority, and the homeowners won. What we have in our law that 791 tried to change was that the prevailing party was entitled to costs and fees. And they tried to change it to say that only the association was entitled to it. That was one of the things that we fought. That's the language we got that changed. The language that the prevailing party is entitled to it is back in there. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many little things that CAI would come and would help you win that. Go to arbitration? Sure. My buddy over here, Jose, is an arbitrator, and we're just going to take you down there. He's going to be so sweet and so nice to you, but you know what? We're going to come back to him over and over and over again. We're going to keep bringing him business again and again and again. You're only going to be in here once. He's going to keep that in mind when he makes his decision. And, oh, by the way, he can decide. There's nothing in the law that says an arbitrator has to protect your rights or decide based on the law. The arbitrator can just arbitrarily make a decision, find for one person. So if you tie yourself up in something like that, you're giving away rights that you don't even know you have.
Well, then I always go back to this. Frankly, we know everyone can agree on one thing. What we have now doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree.
Be it in Virginia, be it in Colorado where you have to go to court. So there has to be a venue for dispute resolution. Now, the way Arizona does it, I'll leave Virginia out of it because we're going to be cooling down on that system. But the Virginia, we call it the Virginia model, was something with a bunch of tweaks in it. There could be changes. Could work. I mean, there's changes would have to be made. But the Arizona model is another one. So there's a hybrid in here or something. Basically what that is, you simply file a complaint. It goes to what appears to be an arbiter who makes a decision. Now, the thing that we advocate is pretty much just that. All of the arbiters are trained. First of all, in what we're trying to do here is, if you have a complaint, and there's two levels of complaints. I don't fully understand it now, but I think Virginia has the same thing. If you're breaking state law, you go through door A. If you have a problem with a local governance thing with the governing documents, you go through B. But without getting into that too much, if I have a complaint, and I'll give you the most simple one, how it would work, and it's supposed to work this way in Virginia, I think the intent, and most certainly in Arizona, is the homeowner wants access to records. HOA says no. There, a complaint is filed for some amount of money, and that can be determined. What happens is it is vetted. What I mean by that is the complaint goes through an initial review, and if it can be supported by governing documents of the HOA or the state HOA law, like in this case, disclosure laws or records release laws, that has a lot of support by state law and local HOA documents. So when it is initially vetted, it says this sounds like a good complaint. Then you're right. It would go to some, in Colorado, would be the proposal is a trained arbiter who has to, in fact, pass a test by the state, so they have training and background. Now,
who's going to train them, Stan?
Well, and that's, by the way, when I say to be worked out, the state is going to have an exam just like we do for property managers.
But who's going to train them, Stan? Who's going to train them? Who's going to design the program? Who's going to design the exam? Who's going to decide whether these people can do this or not?
Well, yeah, and that's always a question. I can tell you what happened. And it was very controversial with us because the CAI has done this in Illinois and other states, and they did it here. When we passed the property management licensing bill last year, we were inflamed. The CAI got their mitts in there and wrote most of it and even had their courses mentioned in legislation, which was unprecedented. It should never have happened. Be that as it is, it went through. Okay, that's history now. We've had many talks with DORA, the state agency, and they have, according to them, lined up other sources. Here are two other sources. According to them, they claim that they have the interest for property management licensing, and we would probably have the equivalent for arbiters in state HOA law, that a group, and I'm going to throw out a name because if I recall, this is what they said. If you're familiar with a group called Kaplan, they do CPA exams and this type of thing. There was interest from that private group to develop courses for property managers, and we hope that would spill over into the arbiters. The other thing we're pushing for very hard is the community colleges. We want them involved in developing the courses, and you actually would go to the community college at night or online, however they want to do it. That's how you would get your credentials and your educational requirements completed. And then the state would exercise or conduct the testing, develop the test, you know, grade them and all that, and then issue a license. Now, what it comes down to, nobody's going to be totally happy, but that's the proposal, if you will, on how it would look. And with an HOA dispute, you would have, like you said, probably a list of 20, let's say, so many arbiters, doesn't matter how many, and someone, however it is decided, either by the person who we call the HOA ombudsman in the state, or it's agreed to by the parties. However that is handled, there would be a trained arbiter, and at the end of that arbitration, there is a decision rendered. Now, note that really is no different than what happens in court. I would rather have an arbiter who's trained and not influenced by whatever that these judges are, but in the end, what I argue is, look, someone's got to decide on your case, for Pete's sake. Don't get too hung up on, don't make the whole case about, do you want a judge to do it, because I know that's not a good place to do it, or do you want an arbiter to do it, and you can argue, well, they're influenced too. Well, someone's got to do it, and the best part of this is, at least I can afford the arbiter, but if I go to court, I could end up with literally thousands of dollars, not just in my cost, in the HOA's cost. And in this case, they exclude, and I was going to try to pick this up real quickly, certain proceedings and rules of evidence and this type of thing in an arbitration that in court they can all be challenged and it gets legal mumbo-jumbo. But that's basically the process. Now, you probably say, well, if you don't like the outcome of the arbiter, well, I can tell you I don't like the outcome, and I was in court with HOAs. I didn't like my outcome. What was I supposed to do? So at least it is two things, accessible and affordable, and everything has flaws in it. But I know what we have now doesn't work. I'm following up with Arizona to see how theirs works. But they basically have what I suggested. You file a complaint. You do not have to go to the arbiter. You can still go to court right up front. That's your decision. But if you go in the arbiter door with the state, you go through a process. The complaint is vetted. It goes to the arbiter. Decision's rendered. End of the case, affordable, accessible. Someone made a decision. And it's one heck of an improvement, I think, over what we have right now, because people won't go to court.
You're on the Commons. We're coming to you from Fairfax, Radio Fairfax. And we're talking to Stan Rincevich, who's in Colorado and who's been working really hard this year to try and get some handle on the abuses in HOAs, particularly when it comes to all of these transfer fees that are nothing more than transferring money out of your pocket into the industry pocket. Stan, the big difference between going to court and going to arbitration is that the court records are public. They are public. When you go into anything other than court, those records are sealed and nobody sees them. I have talked to so many people who have contacted me. I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm going to give you an example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is just putting things out there and perhaps using some of this information to design something better, but nothing that we have right now is perfect. We're fortunate in Virginia. We have some really good judges who really understand that because the homeowners have been winning. But I have to add that we've had some really, really good attorneys who do understand the issues and have been able to argue them correctly, because a judge can only rule based on what is presented to them. And I've actually sat in court where some of the association attorneys have said, yeah, Your Honor, but you see the covenants, they're, you know, they're just a living document. They don't, they're not written in stone. We can change them. We don't have to stick with them. And when one of those attorneys did that, I thought the judge was going to fly over the bench and go at her. Because they're not living documents. They are written in stone, and that's what the law is. And as long as you have an attorney who understands that and is able to present it properly, then even if you have to appeal it and take it up, you know, you've got a better shot at it. And so that's what I'm going to preface that with. I think if you're going to come up with something, whatever it is, make sure that the records are not sealed, because the minute you go behind those closed doors with an arbiter and you're in, you know, you're out of the limelight, anything can happen. Now, I've had people call me, Stan, and they've had years and years and years of harassment and abuse with their HOAs. And they've gone to arbitration, they've gone to mediation, they've done all this, and they have won. And they have won big sums. But they also had to sign a confidentiality clause, which said that if they talked about it, they would lose everything they had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your board abuses me, I'm your next door neighbor, and has been doing so for years. And I come to you and I talk to you about it, and you're terrified of getting involved, because if you say anything, they're going to come after you as well, right? So you kind of stay out of it. So I end up going behind closed doors with an attorney that I pay, just like I would have to pay an attorney to go to court. The association's there with their attorney. And now you have this rent-a-judge who's sitting there. And the association attorney says, okay, we agree. We've been abusing you. We've been harassing you. We've been doing all of this to you. We agree to stop, and we agree to pay you damages. Now, we're going to give you a sum of money, but you can't talk about it. So then you go home and you're sitting there with, I don't know, $100,000, $200,000 of your HOA money. Your money, Stan, and you don't know about it. You don't know that the board used your money to cover up what they did, because, you see, it's not an open system. It's a closed system.
No, well, our comments on that would be this. Our process, because we now know, we have had several thousand complaints turned into the state HOA office, and they've been categorized. What we know from this is that most complaints are for noncompliance with HOA governing documents, like the example I gave, disclosing records or releasing records to a homeowner. With this information, what we know, at least on the complaints filed, and they appear to be, most complaints involve compliance and not even money problems, and the ones that do involve what we'll call money problems are under the small claims court maximum. So what we say in our proposal, which again is on our website, if you have a complaint that is for noncompliance with HOA governing documents and or state law, and by the way, they're mostly reflective of each other, then you can use this process if you want damages less than $7,500, that's the small claims limit, and it doesn't involve a felony. What we found with those constraints, that resolves well over 90% of the cases, because most of the problems homeowners have should not morph into some $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 lawsuit because they're in court. They have to have a lawyer and all this. Most of them to be settled up front before they fester and are easy to resolve. So that's why we think this process works. As far as disclosure, it is something to be decided, when I say along the way, when we get there. I can't find anything in the Arizona law talks about disclosure, but even for most people, if the way this is going to could work, I'm talking to the people at the state HOA office, if I won my disclosure case and the case cost me $150, $200 to file the complaint, what would happen is if I won, I would get remedy. They would order them, and it's a binding court-supported decision to give me the records. And the only thing that would be done at the high level as far as disclosure right now, we haven't gotten into that much detail on it yet, it would have a list or a compilation of all the cases filed, and it would say, I don't know, they would categorize them, records release. And they would say number of cases filed, number of the results, but they wouldn't name Stan in it, the HOA. They would just talk about the outcome. Now, why that is good, it could, again, serve to support some better, more reform and this other stuff. But I don't see any way going to court, even if you win. I know people who have won cases only to lose financially. The cost of going to court can far outseed the benefit, and if they're not awarded the court cost, and I can tell you in Colorado, they do not regain all the money of a court case, if any. It can be awarded to them. In a lot of cases, it isn't. But people, I tell them, you're risking $5,000, $10,000 to have an attorney just on your court costs in many cases. But even if it's collectively, you're risking, it's like going to the casino. If you lose, you're going to pick up all the HOA costs. Is it really worth pursuing HOA records release, like my case? And I lost, believe it or not. All I wanted was the financial records. I lost.
Wait a minute. You wanted financial records and they wouldn't give it to you, and you went to court and you lost that one?
Absolutely. And I can tell you, and I can only disclose part of this. They tell me you're not supposed to disclose it. But what I can tell you is this. I issued an audit report to the HOA about certain things. There were some financial improprieties. And I also, as part of this, was I needed further access to financial records that were denied, and they even denied them to me in writing. So I filed a case in small claims. When I went down there, to make a long story short, I lost the case. Now, one of the problems, it was the judge, and I could give you details of it, but it's almost unbelievable. I even brought in the emails of the case, presented them. I indicated that the governing documents indicated I have access to records. Here's what they did. I'll give you one example. The whole thing was a calamity. When I brought the emails, which were, you know, I printed the emails out, the judge said, why aren't they all certified page by page? And I said, Judge, this is small claims. He says, I'm not accepting anything that you show me that is not certified as an official document. This would have cost me some money. And then when I brought out the governing documents of the HOA that says about records release, he says, all those pages that you're showing me are not certified. He started, this is what the whole case was about. In the first 5 minutes, I knew I lost. The judge was an absolute jerk in support of, and even knew the attorneys, I found out later. I find it a kangaroo court, and so do most people that I've talked to go down to. You never even get to argue your case. It starts getting sidetracked. And in small claims in Colorado, you can have attorneys. So they're bringing one or two attorneys in, spending all of your money, HOA dues, on these folks, because they can't ever lose, as you know, the board. Attorneys can never lose, because win or lose, they get paid. So they are in a win-win situation, essentially. And you are gambling your money, and that's why I call court not very accessible and mostly not affordable to homeowners, because there's a lot of upfront money, and you are gambling, And most people simply don't have the time or the money to go to court, and we can talk about people winning. Hooray for them. But I'll bet you there is 50 cases that are never filed because of the risk of losing and the cost that we don't even hear about.
You're absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct. Because a lot of people are afraid of going to court. A lot of people risk a whole lot. I'm not arguing that at all. I am not arguing that at all. I just don't think that they have a better chance by going to arbitration, which is closed. Now, having said that, I'm not opposed to coming up with a plan. But what I do want to point out is that the Ferrans, and they've been on, and I don't know if you heard them, they won and they bankrupted their HOA. Actually, they didn't bankrupt the HOA. The HOA kept pushing and pushing, and they kept losing and losing. And finally, you know, the Ferrans were awarded costs and fees because the association was totally out of control, was acting outside the scope of their authority. And when the dust settled and when everything was said and done, the Ferrans walked around in, I mean, it's a smaller neighborhood, but they were able to rewrite the entire governing documents. They still have the HOA. The HOA has a strip of land that they can collect money to mow and maintain. They can collect money to remove the snow. They can collect money to buy insurance. But they don't have architectural guidelines. The minute that was done, everybody went out and started building things and decks and improving their property. These were things that homeowners had been wanting to do but were not being allowed to do by the association. It went from being a war zone to being an absolute community. They're having community parties. They're having, you know, the other day we got an extra snowstorm. Somebody came around asking for $25 from each homeowner. And they all collected $25. They hired a snow plow to come in and plow the streets. End of story. So I want to think in terms of gutting the association. And I want to think in terms of having a state agency that has no ties to CAI.
Mm-hmm.
That is not under DORA or any of these other real estate agencies or anything, but maybe under the AG's office. And if you are entitled to books and records, then, and you're not given books and records, your tax dollars should make sure that you get that. Your tax dollars should ensure that you have an ability to see that. But if you have gutted the association, there's nothing for them to do. They have no powers to do anything to you.
Yeah, now, the situation you brought up, somebody took on the HOA.
Yes, they did. They took on the HOA and they won.
My contention is that such events are to show whatever you want to call it, victory, whatever, is cherry-picking the system, because, in fact, the norm is, not just the norm, almost everything I hear out here. One, I don't know anybody has taken on the HOA out here. I can tell you cases where they lost tens of thousands of dollars, just lost, even though many times they were right.
Don't go to court, Stan. Get together with your neighbors and decide that you're going to have a neighborhood. You're going to have a real community instead of a war zone. You don't have to go to court. You can gut, because I think just about every declaration has a provision for amending it.
But that's easier, as we know.
It's easier said than done. It's not impossible.
No, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but if you went over a records issue, you're not going to be able to overthrow the ordinary, anything like that. Most of these neighborhoods that I'm aware of, the boards, unless they commit murder, and maybe they'll even be reelected under that case. They are reelected, and part of that comes from simply the makeup of the community, the longtime residents who know these people. They're only involved, let's call it at emotional level, not factual level or operational level. They vote them in year after year, and there's violations, and it's very, when I say very difficult, I do use a better term than to overturning that. Beyond that, one shouldn't have to worry about spending all that time and effort. And by the way, elections are anything but democratic. We have so many violations out here. They have elections. They throw the results out when they don't like it. They cancel elections.
Oh, I know.
So, on what I'm talking about, if you had and by the way, this was in our law, and it was taken out by the CAI fellows last year. our state HOA office, it was watered down to do a study to come up with the dispute resolution process. That study is done. It's out. It's on our website on the homepage. And it recommends dispute resolution process, binding out of court, and we just need legislative sponsors. That's coming up next year. The process, again, I keep stressing accessible and affordable. That's the main benefit in this because, again, folks just can't do that. I know what I was going to say in the election process. We had in that bill a couple days before it was passed, after it was watered down, the thing they left in or didn't watch for, we had the state HOA office oversight authority and enforcement authority to direct them to conduct elections when they found out irregularities. They could actually get involved in enforcement. Guess what? Right at the end, it was gutted. And it was taken out. And we were so darn upset about that because that was a step forward to have an intervention by, let's call it, we hope, an independent office. So elections in HOAs are anything. They control the newsletters. They can control any documentation floating around. They can control, as you know, board meetings. They can talk about what they want, when they want. And you can fight all you want that you're supposed to have a right to talk about what you want. I've been at them. They cut people off. We'll get back to you. So they can control information. And when you control the information in these close-knit communities of 400 or 500 homes, you basically are controlling an election. And it's very, very difficult to get around that because the homeowners tend, for whatever reason, to believe the board members who, in fact, are the violators because the filtering of, I see it in my neighborhood, the filtering of information. Anything that's bad news has to be false news. They just don't do it.
I've been at this for a long time. I started doing all this about 28 years ago, back before the internet, back before all of this stuff. And I seem to remember an article when internet became used more by people, it was more available. One of the CAI attorneys wrote an article about, we're not going to be able to isolate and keep them in the dark anymore because now they've got access to the internet and access to each other. When I started all of this, about 20 some years ago, we started an organization locally, and we didn't know who anybody was. It was really hard. You had to scour newspapers, go to the library, look things up, try to find people, and to connect with people because nobody knew what was going on. Things have changed so much. Look at us right now. You're in Colorado. I'm in Virginia. We're sitting here sharing our experiences and our thoughts and what we want with the whole world. So things have changed. There are ways of doing it. You can have websites. And they're free. You can do Yahoo lists. I mean, there's so many ways that you can reach out to people. What I recommend is sticking to the facts,
mm-hmm.
and don't no name calling, no getting into the muck. Just stick to the facts. Eventually, people will start listening.
That's the thing that's on our side. But following up on what you said about the internet, I reach out to folks. Tennessee, you probably saw that recent thing. The CAI was intervening in this issues down there with HOAs. I'm encouraging anybody to write to me. If you do not have a website, start it yourself. It doesn't cost much. It's easy to do, and people will find you. Start a website, and it could be, ours is Colorado HOA Forum, call it Tennessee HOA Forum, and I've been talking to a woman down there. I said, it's easy to do. We'll help you do that and go forward with that, and people will find you. And without that, you do not have a constituency to fight anything, fight for rights or promote better governance in HOAs. So I think that is important. I don't know what the Virginia equivalent is of a homeowners group where people can come in, sign on, keep up to date with issues, and begin a mailing list to petition legislators about bills that are upcoming. And back to your word, the facts of that bill, what it will and will not do and why it's being done. When I do this, I always give the pros and cons as if I'm on the other side of the aisle.
Stan, thank you so much for joining us today. We're out of time.
Hey, thank you for your time, too, okay?
But thank you, and I enjoyed talking to you. Good luck. Keep in touch. And your
website. Thank you very much.
Your website is, Stan?
Yeah, www.ColoradoHOAForum.com.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.